I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about today's case. It's one of those that really resonates with me, and it resonates with me for a whole heap of reasons. But one of the big things is I absolutely love traveling, and I don't like traveling in luxurious, expensive ways. I'm a big believer in the open road. One of the things I love about touring with my theatre show is I literally get to see every pocket and avenue in the UK. I get to see places I would never ordinarily go, meet people I would never ordinarily meet, and it just gives me that sense that the world is so much bigger than just me. And when I was a young person, I used to relocate vehicles in Australia, and I used to literally see some of the places and spaces that I would never have had the privilege to do if I hadn't been able to do that. So for me, the open road is everything. And if you get me in a van and you send me on my way, I am the happiest person ever. And I really love the van life YouTube channels because it basically brings me back to those moments where I had my own camper van and I was going all over Australia and then New Zealand, just living that dream. And I think that so many people can associate and acknowledge that. And where James and Michelle Butler are concerned, that's exactly what they were doing. They were living the dream that so many of us hoard in our hearts but never actually go ahead and do. And I just admire human beings who go ahead and grab life with both hands, and particularly when they're individuals who've worked really hard all their lives and they finally arrived at a point where they can do that. Also, before we get into the deep dive of today's case, just want to say thanks to all of you who are watching me on YouTube community and also who are supporting me on Patreon. I am releasing videos every single week, and obviously you guys make it possible for me to create the one that I'm doing right here, right now. So if you are interested in more of my content, you can sign up in the links below. Let's talk about James and Michelle Butler. Like I said, they're literally living their dream. It's so often something that we consider, but we never pursue. After years of being really dedicated to raising their families, and I would say supporting their communities, they were very well liked in their community. They thought to themselves, you know what? It's about us now. It's an opportunity to just embark on the adventure of a lifetime. So James, he was a retired Navy veteran. He was somebody who apparently was really good with discipline and structure, but this wasn't something that made him radically boundaried. As opposed to somebody who couldn't deal with flexibility, he was absolutely somebody who could. He genuinely had this love of life. He was very resourceful, he was very skilled. Apparently he was just able to fix about anything with his hands, which is going to be amazing when you're on the road. Michelle, on the other hand, she was considered, shall I say, the heart of who they were, and I suppose the heart of their journey. She was really warm, she was really optimistic. She was apparently constantly looking for that next big adventure, and she was really good at capturing these moments through her camera lens. Apparently she was amazing at finding beauty in everything. So she'd take beautiful pictures of sunrises, she'd document their journey, and they were basically inseparable. So when you think about a perfect couple, a couple who are totally in harmony, they absolutely were that couple. Now, as they're going on this amazing adventure, they make their way to the Texas coast. This is basically because they want to seek the warmth of Padre Island's beaches, and the family are regularly getting updates and they're getting photos sent, and then all of a sudden they stop. Calls go unanswered, messages are left but there's no response, days turn into weeks, and then the family start to get really afraid. There's that sense of dread as they realize that their loved ones, who without a doubt would be in contact with them, just seem to have vanished without trace. And this is not the way that this couple would operate. So before we move on, let's just talk about 48-year-old James and 46-year-old Michelle. They were both divorcees and they both had children from previous marriages, but they were very synergized in their relationship and with their extended family. James was born on March the 16th, 1960. He was described by the people who knew him as really hardworking, very dedicated. He was very kind, he was very approachable. And his background was basically rooted, as I said, in the services. So he served 20 years in the US Navy. And this demonstrates a man who will serve and protect. Now, after he retired from the Navy, he transitioned into civilian life. He worked in lots of different roles, but it was that passion for the open road, that passion for travel, that really took over as he got to that area of retirement. And he was somebody, like I said, who was very practical, and that bodes well when you're on the open road. Now, he met Michelle, his wife, at a karaoke bar. He was visiting his hometown in New Hampshire at the time. Michelle, she was born on April the 5th, 1966. She was somebody that everybody talks about being just incredibly warm, very friendly, incredibly positive, as I said. She was very independent. She was very free-spirited. And her passion lay in meeting new people, seeing new places. She had lots of interests, but her nature interest, her photography interest, the capacity to document the adventures that she was on was something that really stood out. And she had this apparent innate ability to bring out the best in people, and also to have that capacity to just make you feel special as a human being. And apparently she was the driving force behind the couple's decision to essentially go on that nomadic journey, to live that nomadic lifestyle. And it's brave, isn't it? I think in the Western-centric model, we just kind of go through the motions, don't we? We kind of reach these milestones. And often when people think about coming to a retirement phase of their life, even if they're young, in their 50s, for example, it's a little bit scary at times, isn't it? And people are thinking about, do I have a pension? How am I going to make ends meet? And to just think to yourself, you know what? It's a breath of consciousness, a blink of an eye of being our life. So why not just do it? Why not just say, things could go wrong, things might go wrong. We might run out of money and so on and so forth, but actually, are we going to regret that? In that final moment before we take our last breath, are we going to think, oh, I really regret that amazing landscape that I saw, or the beaches I went to, or the people that I met? No, they're the things that give us life force. They're the things that energize us. And I think that she saw that and knew that, and she wanted to share that with James and with their love story. And the very fact that they are individuals who had that shared passion, that would have boded well for connectedness within their relationship. After they met, they actually got married in 2015, and they were aware that they had responsibilities. They had children. Like I said, there was an extended family. But once they'd all grown up and moved out, they felt that that dream of traveling the USA was just so imperative for their happiness. And so it was 2018 that they actually began their RV adventure. So they rented out the home in New Hampshire, and instead they chose to rent an RV, which was going to take them all over America. Now, as I said, even though they had relationships which had had children involved, they did not disconnect from those relationships. They both had really strong bonds with their extended families. And even though they had what could be considered quite an unconventional life on the road, their children were really close to them. They were really close to their grandchildren. They were always in communication. As I said, they were sharing updates about their travels. And also, they often returned to New Hampshire to actually visit the family, to enjoy time together. So yes, they were on this incredible road trip. They were going on this amazing adventure, but they never let go of what was their foundation, which is their family. And again, that's just that messaging, isn't it? That you can have the best of both worlds. It's not about one or the other. It's not about convention or nomadic. It's about being able to bring all of that together in the perfect synergy. So obviously this meant they'd both quit their jobs. James had apparently been working at Walmart. Michelle had quit her office job to go on the road. And one of the things that I love about Michelle, I mean, there are so many things in the description that I've given you of who she was, is that she just loved her animals. And all of you on this channel know I have a lot of animals. Not quite as many animals as I do hoodies and t-shirts in my house, but I do have a lot of animals. Some would say too many, but I do love my animals. And Chase often appears in my videos, as does Blue, as does Dolly, as does Wookie at times. And with respect, she reminds me of me in the fact that she brought her three cats along. So they're on the journey. They are on the ride as well. It worries me when I think about doing that though, because I imagine that my cats, who I've got no sense of direction whatsoever, I just think that they'd leave the RV and it would be the last I would see of them. I'd see their little ginger tail just disappearing through the cornfield. Oh no, I've never seen them again. They just end up living with some sweet old lady somewhere, because I can guarantee they would not get back to my RV. But this is her trust in her animals. They were obviously better with their senses of direction than mine would be. So off they go. And they travel around the country. They've been to New York. They've been to visit a friend in Arizona. They'd actually stayed there for months. They've been picking up odd jobs because they're obviously working as well along the way. And they're just having an exciting time. Then in September 2019, they actually returned to New Hampshire. And the reason for that is there was a wedding of Michelle's son, Bradley, which is a massive celebration. And then after that wedding, this is when they set off for what will be their fateful trip to Texas. This is where things take an extraordinarily horrible turn for the couple. They are travelling through Texas. They're on the way to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Apparently there was a seasonal job at a Christmas tree lot that they were going to pursue. They were going to arrive there in Florida on the 20th of November. So they're obviously excellent at executing their journeys in parallel with job opportunities. And it's coming to that season, isn't it, where everybody's getting excited and they're on their way to do this Christmas seasonal job. But there'll be so many positive thoughts going on, won't there? Because they're making this work. They're making this dream happen. And at this point, they're traveling in their silver Chevrolet pickup and RV. And in October 2019, they'd actually made it to Texas. So at this point, they'd set up camp at the Padre Bali Park. This is on the 14th of October. Now, this is $25 a night. So understandably, that's a cost. And if you work that out, when you are traveling and you're trying to make ends meet and you genuinely are living on a shoestring budget, you don't want to be spending $25 a night for some kind of park to use your RV at, because essentially that's a waste of resources. So understandably, they think to themselves, there's going to be a cheaper way to do this. And they're seasoned at travel now. So they actually head to a nearby beach. This meant that, of course, they could park up for free. It's not like that in the UK, guys, for the most part. I'm just going to throw it out there. A lot of you in the UK will be like, what do you mean? What do you mean park for free? What's this parking for free business? I know. I go all over the UK constantly on my tour. I don't park for free anywhere. In fact, I have to look for a filter when I book anywhere to see that it has parking without height restrictions as well. It's very complex. But genuinely, in New Zealand when I lived out there and Australia when I lived out there, I would just park up in the most amazing places. And they would have toilets in this nature stop where you could look after yourself and deal with your hygiene whilst also parking for free, which is just an astonishingly beautiful reality. And it's about encouraging people to enjoy nature as opposed to making it all but impossible for people on a budget to do so. So they go to that beach and do that. They set up the RV on this remote stretch of beach, and apparently it was quite shielded by the dunes, so it won't be windy, and it was known as the Bowl, that area. Now, on the 15th of October, the couple are seen going to the post office. And the reason that they go on that trip is they wanted to mail their granddaughter these Texas-made cowgirl boots. She was apparently starting horse riding lessons. Doesn't that just tell you something about this couple? Like, they're on a shoestring budget. They're working their way around, creating this dream possibility. And yet, in these moments, they're actually going and buying relatively expensive, I would imagine, boots because the grandchild is starting horse riding lessons. It means that no matter where they are, the family is immediately in their mind all the time. And this should be a point of celebration. She should get those boots and be like, oh my God, my grandparents are the best people ever, which they are and were. But that doesn't happen because of what occurs shortly after. Because all of a sudden, all of that contact that they've been sharing with the family, it just ends. Now, what they didn't know as a couple is that on the same stretch of beach, there was another couple who'd also set up camp. This was Adam Curtis Williams and Amanda Nova. So let's talk about Nova. She was born on June the 18th, 1993. She was born in Texas. There isn't a lot known about her early life. I've done a lot of research. I've looked at her family background and upbringing, but there isn't a great deal of detail out there. I would say there was a very significant event. Her mother dies when she's in high school, and it appears that at this point she went on a really self-destructive streak, and we can all empathise with that. To lose a primary caregiver in your teens, particularly when you're close to them, is absolutely blindsiding. Some of you will have been through it. You will know. It is like having the very foundation of your experience ripped away and nothing feels safe, and there isn't that safe place to go, and everything about your life is vulnerable, at least for a period of time, and the wounds that that can inflict can be absolutely catastrophic on some people in certain circumstances. We understand that does not give anybody any gravity or right to go out and do anything horrible to other people. But when we look at fractures in foundations, the loss of a primary carer can cause enormous issues in future relationships. For example, we base our attachment levels often on the relationships we have with our parents. And if it's good, we have good attachment levels. But if it's broken because our caregiver is stolen from us by death, then understandably, the stability that we feel is destabilized. And therefore, when we look into other relationships, we can sometimes mistake what we think is intensity and connection for something that is toxic, but is equally intense. So just to acknowledge that that can be an impact when you have been in a scenario of grief as a teenager. And her old friend said one of the things that was very obvious from the get-go of her mother dying is that she just didn't make good choices anymore. There was this spiraling in her behavior, and certainly her relationships reflected that. So the partners that she'd had prior to Williams that we're talking about today, they were not the best of choices. But again, if you've lost your stability, if you are desperate to find that shape of love that's now missing in your life because your mother is dead, then finding it in other people is something that understandably you'll seek out, and that can work in your favor when you meet good people, and it can work against you when you meet bad people or broken people. And that's essentially what happens when she meets Williams. Essentially, she manages to do that rose-tinted spectacles approach and just ignores his past. Now, we always talk about the fact that your past history is probably the best indicator of your future behavior. So the very fact that she's able to see his past and not actually say to herself, there's probably some massive red flags here, that's an issue. Because come on, we all accept that we all have baggage. Every one of you watching this right now, you've got some baggage, you've got some skeletons in your cupboards. Some of you have got tiny little skeletons this big, and some of you have got massive ones, and some of us share those skeletons and some of us keep them secret. But we all have, to some degree, moments where our behaviour fell short. And ideally, when you're in a relationship with somebody, you're able to talk about those vulnerabilities and fractures in your personality and in your behaviours and have it accepted within reason. So Ted Bundy had a past. If you happened to sit and chat with him and he was telling that past to you, hopefully you'd have ran a million miles. Obviously, not everyone got the memo where he was concerned. And as we know, one female had his baby whilst he was actually incarcerated. But for the most part, 99.999% of us will have some judgment based when we hear about very disturbing facts about a partner, particularly if they're unfolding that whilst we're initially getting involved with them. Equally, we all know bad love exists. We know that people can absolutely fall hard and fast and intensely and believe that this person has got this horrible fractured past is just somebody who is misunderstood. How many times have you heard people say, ah, oh, they're really great. Sorry, are they? Yeah, they're really great. Didn't they serve like 8 years in prison for really serious crimes? Yeah, but what you don't understand about that is that was because his father didn't listen to him when he was eight. I'm not sure that's the reason. Yeah, it is. It's a reason. And actually his defense in court used that as a reason, specifically said his father didn't listen to him when he was eight. I know that defense lost, didn't it? Yes, yeah. But obviously that's because the jury were not sympathetic at all. I think it was more they have the attack on CCTV. Listen, we're not going to agree on this. Just accept that he's great and I'm really happy and it's all going to be fine. Okay? That's something that we all know plays out. And essentially that's what happens when she meets Williams. Let's talk about Williams. So he was born on August the 12th, 1984, again in Texas. He was actually brought up in a very unstable situation. He had a lot of challenges in his life. And of course, we can say all those fractures in his foundations create the pen portrait of possibility. That goes without saying. It does not excuse who he becomes. He was raised in a lower middle class family. He had a very turbulent home life, apparently. There were a lot of moves. And we know that that creates instability where young people are concerned. You create peer networks and they get removed. That can make you feel very unstable. And it can make you feel that you're not accepted, and it can make you feel overwhelmed with the need to once again reinvent yourselves when you come to another place with another peers. So that can be really problematic. Also, there were financial difficulties, and everybody and anybody who's ever been in a financially difficult situation, I certainly have been, you can't help but feel a level of stress. Now, for most of us, when we feel stress, we will be people who can keep it from our kids. I appreciate that you can't be the most happy-go-lucky person when you're dealing with potential financial ruin. I remember those feelings. But for the most part, you can say to yourself, well, you know what, I'm still feeding my children, I can work this through, but it doesn't mean that there won't be that kind of stress within you. And even though you're doing your best to cover it, you won't be as joyful as you usually would be. Now, add to that turbulence in the family, add to that lots of moves, you can imagine that stress could play out in some pretty negative ways in his family life. And apparently they really struggled as a family with being stable, and that was both on an emotional level and an economic level, which is very challenging for any child. And it meant that Williams didn't have what I would consider as a constructive, consistent structure within his family life in early years. Understandably, that plays out as well when it comes down to his academic record. So he had a really sporadic academic record. And for the most part, we can say that people like myself and like many of you watching, because you always tell me this, we can truant to our heart's content. We can be the kind of kids that they're like, we should just bring another kid into the school because this person's never here. You know, we can acknowledge that we may relate to those moments and that reality within our education. However, most of us will go ahead and find ourselves at some point. But without a doubt, even for myself and for many other people that I've spoken to, and certainly the young people that I work with, when you've got a fractured academic record, it makes everything more difficult. For example, you're not going to succeed academically in the way that your peers will. You are going to feel there are massive gaps in your learning. You are going to get stressed and anxious about the reality of that. And it's going to limit some of your options unless you get your shit together at some point. And most of us do. And when we look at the research in truancy, absolutely, people with higher levels of truancy do struggle more when it comes down to gaining employment, when it comes down sometimes to even to relationships, also the whole heap of behavioural and emotional issues that can go with it because of the reasoning behind why you have truanted. All those can contribute to you having bigger problems as an adult. Now, he did manage to complete high school, but he didn't actually go ahead and pursue higher education. He didn't do any vocational training afterwards. And that lack of educational and career direction, basically, I would say, will have contributed to those feelings that all of us would have of frustration and inadequacy. And they have the potential to manifest. And they can manifest in really problematic behaviours at times. Every young offender that I used to work with, I mean, every single one of them, every single one. There was not one young person that I worked with during my decade of the joy I had in working with those individuals that had not, when I looked back at their actual record academically, had not been a high-level truant. And I'm talking about from very early years. So this is something that we see as a pattern when it comes down to problematic behaviour down the line. It's not the only indicator, but it is certainly one of the indicators. And even I can own that when I was truanting, let's just say I wasn't doing things that were that positive, you know? I did get quite good at playing pool. Wasn't so good at darts. Unfortunately, my father would have loved that, but that didn't happen. But also, I was getting involved in some things that really were naughty because you know what? You're surrounded by other people who are doing things that are not necessarily typical and conventional. That's why you're truanting. So of course, it is a predictor to some degree. Now, as he reaches adulthood, these issues are absolutely deepening. He's getting involved in petty crimes, he's getting involved in theft, and also he's getting involved in substance abuse. So we could say his education was more criminal than academic, and he had actually spent 8 years of his life in federal prison. So that's a big deal. You know, there's a real record there. And one of the things that I've picked up is William's life apparently changed, and I have absolute sympathy and empathy for him in this moment, is his father took his own life. And apparently he actually saw that play out. Now, I, as you know, have been through that. I feel like I'm making this all about me, and I'm not trying to do that. So apologies if it's coming across that way. It's just that it's really hard when you've been through a complete transformation in your life, a complete letting go of what was and accepting what is. Unless you've been through a moment similar, it's really hard for people to connect how that changes you. And I think it has the absolute power to change you for the better or for the worse. And I would hope, I genuinely would hope, and in respect to my father, who's no longer here, his impact of taking his life and me finding him and dealing with all of the things that happened around that, that that's made me a better person. I genuinely believe it did, but I also know that it made me question whether I wanted to be here. It made me very angry for a short period of time. It made me have to really connect with my faith to just survive. And I can completely understand why a young man in particular may witness something like that and think, I hate the world and I hate everybody in it. Because remember, again, as a young person, you are not computing the world in the same way as you would when you are grown and when you've been through the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. I get it. So if you actually witness a parent taking their own life, you feel abandoned. You feel like, what's the point? If this person can essentially traumatize me to this degree, how did I have any meaning to this world? And also, the pain is just so absolutely incomprehensible and incalculable and actually incomparable to other losses. So, you know, I have lost people that I absolutely loved beyond belief. You know, I lost my best friend from 7 years of age. I literally nursed her as she was dying. I was with her at her home when she took her last breath. She had cancer. And it is absolutely blindsiding for me that I don't hear her laugh and I don't get to spend time with her. She is the one person ultimately in my life that understood me like nobody else and who transitioned with me through every first. And she's gone and I understand it and I understand why. And it was painful and it was exquisitely beautiful, even though it was agonizing, because I am so glad I shared that space with her. With my father, completely incomparable on every level. Suicide and traumatic death, such as murder, they are a different level. And that's why I completely understand that people will seek out alternatives to manage, such as self-medication. The truth is, alcohol is a terrible thing to use. Drugs are a terrible thing to use. All it does is sidesteps reality and means that you're not looking down the barrel of the gun and dealing with the grief as you should. But I understand why you would want to self-medicate it, because it's just intolerable. So for him, I feel that that experience certainly will have had an impact and probably taken his life on that bad direction. By the way, no excuses. What he does is deplorable. There is no reasoning behind it. It is a selfish, egotistical reality of his actions. But I think when we look at those fractures, it's important to bring them in. Now, apparently Nova and Williams's relationship was not ideal. Apparently they both took drugs. Their relationship was quite violent. Apparently they had quite a lot of run-ins with the law as a couple, and both of them had criminal histories to a degree. So with Nova, it was more of a misdemeanor criminal history. So this included assault, it included disorderly conduct, but we're talking about less serious issues. So Williams, on the other hand, was somebody who had a very long criminal record and a large arrest record. This isn't a complete record because there'll be some gaps, because bear in mind he spent time in prison and I won't have been able to turn up every single event that has occurred in his life on a criminal level. But in 2019, he was charged with aggravated assault, both in the first degree and third degree. He was also charged with interference with an arresting officer. He was also charged with intoxication. He was also charged in 2019 with an unlawful purchase by an indicted person. And there was a warrant out for his arrest on the 10th of the 8th, 2019, because he hadn't actually appeared as he should have in court with those charges. Also in 2019, there'd been a first degree object rape charge, a forcible sodomy in the first degree charge, a forcible sexual abuse in the second degree charge.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
He had a restraining order in 2019. He was also in 2010 charged with distributing or arranging the distribution of a controlled substance in the second degree and in the first degree. And there were numerous amounts of possession with intent to supply, or intent to distribute, as it's called in the US. He was also charged with possession of a dangerous weapon by a restricted person in the second degree in 2010, and was also charged with receiving stolen property. So the list is endless. This guy had absolutely had a long criminal history. He was actually on the run because of the felonies that related in particular to sexual assaults on a woman in Cache County in Utah, and also the aggravated assault of that individual. So he is somebody who is very, very dangerous. Let's just put it out there immediately. This is somebody who's refused essentially to appear in court in spite of the serious charges. So he's not somebody who follows any kind of boundaries. And I would imagine that he would know in the back of his mind the way that he's going to escape is all but impossible. Because let's be clear, these days CCTV is everywhere. Everyone is connected. He's actually on the run for some incredibly serious offences. There's a strong likelihood as well that he will reoffend because it's clearly in his nature. So the chances are he knows that the time on the run is going to come to an end pretty abruptly at some point. And yet it doesn't seem to sway him from making terrible choices and fatal choices in the case that I'm talking about today. So in 2019, this incredibly toxic couple, should we just put it out there immediately because they are incredibly toxic, they end up hitting the road for Texas. Now, the reason for that is they want to get to Mexico because they've got it in their minds that this is how they're going to start their new lives. They just need to get to Mexico. Just get to Mexico. It'll be fine. I'm not sure it works that way. No. You don't understand. We've got some issues with each other and also particularly with his outstanding felonies, but we feel that all we need is new scenery and we'll be fine. Have you thought about all of the law enforcement agencies that are literally going to be on your tail? No, we've not done that because neither of us are consequential thinkers. Look at us, we're in a relationship with each other and we are a terrible match. We're not thinking consequential. We're thinking immediacy. And also, long-term, it's not really something we've considered. I have a really bad feeling this is going to go awfully wrong. They've gone. I think he was probably about to put on a fake moustache from what I can see, and she was wearing a sombrero. Sorry, but it's ludicrous, isn't it? I mean, they may as well do what I've just said, because the reality is he is on the run for some really serious offences. So, albeit I'm sure there are a lot of people who are on the run, they are very good at closing the net in on these kind of sexual predators, and these are not the kind of couple who are going to be able to keep quiet, keep it together, and get away with things. Also, what is really harrowing about them is they are travelling with Nova's young child. So there is a little child involved. This is an infant, by the way. So that child is being put at risk. This man is a sexual predator of the highest level. And essentially, she is allowing him access to her child. And I know that people will say, well, there's no evidence there that he's molesting the child. I get it. But that's not my reasoning. My reasoning is, why would you ever risk your child being around a man who is so clearly predatorial, violent, and dangerous? It just is a terrible parenting choice. And she deserves judgment and harsh judgment for that. Now, of course, it isn't as simple as just getting to Mexico. They actually need some money. And also, they're not going to be able to walk there, are they? So they're going to have to find a vehicle. And this is essentially what they start to think about when they're camping on that very beach on Padre Island in South Texas. They're thinking at the end of the day, we're going to need some transport. We're going to need to get to that border of Mexico. And how on earth are we going to do that? So Williams and Nova obviously have these concerns and they've got this plan brewing because essentially they need to get out of the country and potentially they need to get out of the country by any means necessary. So on October the 16th, they're going along the beach and they happen to meet Michelle and James. They're there, camping in the same area. Now, after they have a chat, Williams ends up telling Nova to meet him back at the RV site later. He comes back to the RV site. Apart from this time, he brings with him a 9mm gun. And both James and Michelle were literally executed by Williams. They were each shot in the head. Now, clearly, there is absolutely no positive slant that I can put on what I've just described. Like I said, they were executed in cold blood. My only hope is there was no torture involved. Neither of them was waiting. It happened like a bolt out of the blue. And they were dead before they actually knew what was happening. And the only thing that happened next was they were in bliss and surrounded by love. That's the only hope that I have in my heart. The idea that you would see this playing out in front of your eyes as your partner dies in front of you, and then you knew it was going to happen to you too, that is just too torturous to even envisage. I just hope it happened with such speed and so out of the blue that neither of them knew it was coming. Now, following those brutal murders, the execution of this gorgeous couple, Nova doesn't run. She doesn't start screaming. She didn't call 911. And I'm coming down heavily on her because her makeup and mindset is not the same as William's. She's a mother. She's had relationships that have been loving. She should know immediately that what has just played out in front of her eyes doesn't just have massive implications for her as a human being and her child. She's witnessed the brutal execution of two people who did not deserve that in any way, shape, or form. What were they guilty of? Meeting them. That was it. Meeting Williams and Nova. That is the only thing that James and Michelle are guilty of. The misfortune to run into them. And yet, she helps him bury the bodies. So they create these shallow graves in the dunes. And then what do? They steal their RV and pickup truck. And they make their getaway to Mexico. So this is that cuckoo effect, isn't it, that we see play out, where people feel so superior and so entitled that the lives of these absolutely incalculably important, precious beings are just eradicated because you know they serve a purpose. That sense of, I need a van, I need somewhere to sleep. Oh, they've got a van, they've got somewhere to sleep. Oh, I know, I'll kill them so I can have it for myself. It is such a delusional mindset, and I don't mean an insane mindset, I mean a delusional mindset that comes from this grandiose belief system that they deserve what those people have earned. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about James and Michelle worked hard all their lives, a man who dedicated himself to serving and protecting his people, his nation, and these absolute wastes of space. These human excuses who steal air from others, essentially. They feel that it is acceptable to take all that they have earned for themselves without doing anything, apart from pulling the trigger on a gun. Despicable, deplorable, doesn't even come into this because it is far more evil than that. It is the looking at another human being and believing, you don't deserve what you have worked hard for. I have done none of this. I have worked not at all, but I will take it from you because I believe my life should be easier. And how dare you, who have worked so hard for what you've created, remain seated within it. I'm going to remove that chair altogether, and the consequences don't bother me because at the end of the day, I've got what I wanted. There is something so dark and indulgent about making that choice to just steal another person's hard work, and to not think about the ramifications of what's just happened, because they're not just two people who've been executed. The ramifications and the ripple effect on their family is going to be absolutely harrowing. Now, bear in mind, this couple have been constantly sending updates to their family members. They are expecting photographs, they're expecting messages, and yet all of a sudden it stops. In fact, the last contact that they had with their family is the 14th of October. On the 17th of October, the daughter-in-law actually tries to FaceTime them because they apparently had this regularly scheduled call. And the reason that they were calling as well is because the granddaughter had got those gorgeous new boots and she was really excited. They try, but they can't reach the couple. Messages aren't going through. They don't answer the phones. So we get to the 23rd of October. This is after a few days of trying to make contact with James and Michelle. They go ahead and report them missing to the Cleburne County Sheriff's Office, obviously very worried, but also probably very hopeful that maybe something has just happened with their connection. Maybe they've caught up in a beautiful place. Maybe everything is okay and we just simply can't connect with them. Now, Cleburne County Sheriff's Office, they then work with the family. They do take it seriously because this is so out of the blue. They are not the kind of individuals who would just disappear. Now, on the 16th of October, what the family had seen was that James and Michelle had actually posted some photos on Facebook, and they showed the RV on the beach. And Michelle's actually relaxing on a chair. She's got her toes in the water. You know, it's that idyllic dream that they've been chasing coming to life. Now, those photos from the Facebook, as well as their cell phones that connected with towers, kind of gave an approximate reality of their last location. So at this point, the police are able to find where the empty campsite was. And at this point, the police issue a press release because they want to know if anybody's got any details. Now, a family friend, a woman called Barbara Hainsworth, who's obviously a lovely human being. I just love it that even in these dark circumstances that I'm describing, there's always light that just punctures it, isn't there? Like, even in the worst of times, you find the best of people. And Barbara Hainsworth does that. She creates this Facebook page called Finding Michelle and James Butler, and it blew up online. So now we've got a whole heap of news coverage because people get it. You know, we've got this couple, worked really hard, created this opportunity, have this great family, all the good in the world, and all the dreams being achieved through that good in the world. And then it's just gone. People are like, something sinister has to have happened. It does not make sense. And if it does not make sense, it's because it's nonsense. There is nonsense to their disappearance. Therefore, you have to figure that something truly horrible is likely befallen this gorgeous couple. Now, horrifically for the family, on October the 27th, a piece of news comes out that I would imagine just fills them with dread. So human remains are found in a shallow grave on Padre Island near beach marker 263. Apparently the body at this point that they found appears to be a woman. So you can imagine they're instantly as a family going to be thinking, this is Michelle. It's going to be their worst fears. Equally, there'll be a level of hope. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe this is just some horrible mistake. And the very next morning, the investigation ups, essentially. So Texas Rangers and the Texas DPS Crime Lab, US Customs and Border Protection, Texas Parks and Wildlife, and the US Coast Guard start investigating the whole area with cadaver dogs. Unfortunately, what that then uncovers is the body of a man. And he was actually buried beneath the woman. Now, both of the bodies were understandably severely decomposed, and the chief deputy said that it could be several days before they could actually formally be identified. But let's be real, for James and Michelle's family, this is going to feel like they have got the worst news. And even though they'll be clutching to some degree to this hope that it's not James and Michelle, I would imagine that on a psychological level, they've accepted that it's the strongest likelihood possible. Another thing that the investigators immediately note is that James and Michelle's truck and RV are missing. So they're going to have immediate suspicions about why the killing has taken place, because it's likely that whoever's killed them has wanted the vehicles that they have. Now, US Border Patrol, they end up having a break in the case on the 29th of October. So at this point, they managed to capture the video of James and Michelle's vehicles crossing the border into Mexico. So they've actually got there, you know, they've actually done what they wanted to do. They've made it to Mexico. You know, the new life is beckoning. It's all going to be fine now. Nothing to worry about. Now you've committed a double homicide. Forget the fact that Williams was on the run for the most heinous offences. Now we're dealing with a double homicide. Now, the license plates on the pickup and RV were instantly matched to James and Michelle's missing vehicles. So this demonstrates just the lack of sophistication, doesn't it? The very fact that they haven't even tried to change the license plates, which indicate that they're the people responsible for being in vehicles that don't belong to them. They were also, because they now had the vehicle being tracked, to find an image of a then unidentified man who was driving the truck. Now, obviously, later he's identified as Williams. So they've got a picture of him and they've got a picture of the actual vehicles. Now, that image of Williams, who's driving James and Michelle's RV, was taken on the 21st of October. Now, on the 1st of November, those remains that I've just talked about that were found on the beach were formally identified as James and Michelle Butler. Authorities at this point announced that they were being investigated as homicides. They didn't actually disclose to the general public how they died, but understandably, no one was in any doubt that they had indeed been murdered. On the 4th of November, the images of Williams driving the vehicle, they're then shared on news reports. He hadn't been identified at that point, but obviously they've disseminated this because it's a way of quickly spreading his image so that if he happens to pass through your area, you might note it and get in contact with the authorities. Now, police were actually approached by a number of people, in fact, who recognised him. So the park ranger, who'd in fact pulled over Williams in Padre Island at the National Seashore on the 13th of October. He'd pulled him over for a traffic stop. He'd actually given him a citation because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt at the time. Now, this was about 13 miles south of Padre Valley Park, where obviously James and Michelle had been staying. A local businessman also recognised him, and relatives of Williams actually provided police with the identity of both he and his partner, Amanda Nova. So now they've got two names. Now, on the 5th of November, a felony theft arrest warrant was issued for Williams because obviously he could be driving that vehicle and be totally unrelated to the murders. He could just have purchased a vehicle, shall we say, from somebody who'd sold it without knowing that the reason it was being sold was because the owners had been murdered. So it makes perfect sense that they're just looking to charge him with felony theft because he's driving around in a stolen vehicle. Now, authorities at this point announced that Williams had been seen driving James and Michelle's pickup truck across the Mexico border. They also put it out that he would likely be armed and dangerous because clearly they think he's been involved in double homicide, and he's certainly got a list of prior criminal convictions that makes him very dangerous indeed. Nova, she's considered a person of interest and at this point was being sought for questioning. Now, the Clayburgh Sheriff's Office actually leaked information to the AP wire in Mexico. Now, this led to both of the fugitives being spotted in an RV park in Jalisco. So fortunately, because this information is leaked, people are on the lookout and they actually find the RV parked in Jalisco. So during the couple escaping to Mexico, one of the things that plays out is that Nova had actually been in contact with a friend of hers, a really long-time friend, a guy called Dylan Aller. And he said that during that conversation with him, it was very clear that she wanted to leave Adams. She wasn't being explicit, but he could just sense that she was trying to have that conversation with him. Now, he gave the Texas Rangers information about where they were in Mexico, and he said that she was seeing this news story play out all over the press and just wanted to turn herself in because she knew they were dead to rights, they were banged to rights, there was nothing they were going to be able to do to not associate themselves with what had played out. And she just accepted that this was going to be a reality and wanted to end it by turning herself in. But that doesn't happen. She doesn't actually turn herself in. And the reason I'm always skeptical about these kind of scenarios being played out when somebody's in a hearsay situation is because you can say, I want to turn myself in, but you know, there's a very simple thing to do, turn yourself in. You know, if you're on the phone to somebody, just dial the local emergency services and let them know where you are and turn yourself in. The fact that you didn't turn yourself in indicates to me, well, you weren't necessarily entirely sure about turning yourself in. So we get to the 6th of November. At this point, the couple are basically surprised at the RV park. They're with the 3-year-old child of Nova as well. So that child's going to be traumatized. And at this point, both of them are arrested. Now, the FBI immediately search the RV, find the murder weapon, and also find all the DNA evidence that they could possibly want, which connects Nova and Williams to James and Michelle's murder. On the 6th of November, Williams is actually removed from Mexico and brought back to Texas. At this point, he's booked into the Clayburgh County Jail on suspicion of felony theft and also on assault of a public servant. Then in the early hours of the 7th of November, a warrant on suspicion of theft was issued for Nova. She was then brought back to Texas. She was booked into the Clayburgh County Jail around 3 a.m. on the 8th of November. Now, following Williams and Nova's arrests, James and Michelle's family speak out and they said, we want justice. We want to make sure that we get justice as this investigation into the murders of our loved ones go forward. James Butler's sister, Deborah Van Loon, said she was so relieved that the arrest had happened. She said, I want justice. I hope to find out what they did, why they did what they did. And if it was them, I want them to pay for what they did. And I think we can all imagine how she might wish for them to pay for what they did. She went on to say, I just miss them a lot. We all miss them so very much. And it's going to be such a big hole in our hearts. And she and the family actually started a GoFundMe page because they wanted, obviously, to help the whole family travel to Texas. They wanted to get the remains, essentially, of their loved ones. And she said, we're making plans slowly, and these funds will help to get James and Michelle home and for services and to help his children get those services. Van Loon actually wrote on that site asking on the GoFundMe for support. She said, your support is unbelievably gracious and the comfort it brings is much more than you know. And I often think that you guys underestimate these kind of things when you go ahead and donate and you do nice things for people who are in need, because often you just see it as an action that just feels natural to you, but actually it's so life-changing for people when they're in those moments of absolute despair. In a moment where everything is bleak and everything is dark and you genuinely believe that the world has dealt you this incredibly unfair card and that people don't understand, and then you put it out there into the stratosphere and suddenly strangers just connect and say, I'm sharing this with you, I'm donating to your journey, I care for your story, I want the legacy for the victims. It is just something that doesn't change the grief, but the grief becomes something that is packaged with hope as well. And that is just such a powerful thing that so many of you guys do all the time. Now, both Williams and Nova's bonds were set at $1 million because the judge was like, how much should I set this bond at? Well, I mean, they have around $50 to their names. How likely are they to be able to get out if I set bond at, I don't know, $30,000? Never, they'll never get out. I'm going to put it as $1 million then. Oh, it seems excessive. You haven't heard the sentence I'm intending to give them. And at this point, they were also granted court-appointed attorneys because they told District Judge Jack Pulcher that they didn't have any source of income, so they couldn't afford to get one to represent them themselves. Now, in 2020, the pair are also charged with tampering with evidence and, of course, capital murder, which they deserve to be charged with, along with the theft charge relating to the RV, etc. Now, according to the indictment, that tampering charge was linked to the burial of James and Michelle's bodies. It's just so harrowing, isn't it, that when I'm saying those words, we're talking about this incredible couple who are just living their dream, ending up buried in the sand, a place of such beauty for them, ending in such horrific, willful destruction of who they were as human beings. We get to November 2021, and at this point, Williams goes ahead and makes a deal with prosecutors, and he agreed to plead guilty. But why wouldn't he? At the end of the day, why wouldn't he? He ain't going to be walking from any prison. You know, when people talk about plea deals, I think that for most of us, we're thinking, well, is it that it feels like it's going to be an easier sentence if they go ahead and do that? And often it can be that the person doesn't believe that they are guilty of what they actually have been charged with, and they're willing to accept a lesser charge, and it kind of makes sense. But in this case, he's absolutely banged to rights. There is no way he could have got away with this. But at the end of the day, he is still allowed to make a deal with prosecutors. He pled guilty to capital murder, unlawful use of a firearm, theft and tampering with evidence. Bear in mind, he had this massive prior criminal history, but he didn't want to get put to death. Let's just be clear about this. Even though he could have been somebody who could have chanced his luck in court and maybe considered that he might get a lesser sentence than life without parole, so he's added up in his brain, you know, if I stand in front of a jury and say, oh, like, don't find me as guilty as I really am, the chances are they're going to look at you and think, well, you know what? You executed two people in cold blood. Why? Because you wanted to steal their vehicle? Like, that's how you value life? That your needs to get to the Mexican border is more important than their right to what they've earned? I mean, that makes you one cold, hard bastard, doesn't it? I mean, there's no other way of describing it. So without a doubt, he's just saving his own skin. This is somebody who's been used to prison. He spent 8 years inside. He knows what he's facing. So as far as he's concerned, potentially life without parole, yeah, that's not great, but it's better than being put to death. And if the prosecutors had sought the death penalty, you could imagine that, as I've just described the killings, they as a jury may well have thought, well, he deserves it. You know, he meets that very serious bar as somebody who does not deserve oxygen. And the prosecutors had made it very, very clear, listen, we go to court, you fight this, then you better be ready. Because you can do, think, say what you like, but we are going for the death penalty. That's it. We go to court in this context, we go to court in this way, we do not want you breathing again. Now, as I've said, that was negated for the guilty plea, but it meant that it would be a life without the possibility of parole. And he was indeed 35 years of age, given that sentence. And at this point, of course, those who were affected by these horrendous killings got to speak in court regarding how they felt about what had happened to them. So Deborah Van Loon, James's sister, she said, our lives are forever changed. They have destroyed so much more than they will ever know. And you know, it's interesting, isn't it, when somebody uses those kind of words, because to you and I, we get it straight away. We're like, we know, we absolutely understand the destruction that has played out in your lives because of the selfish actions of this couple. We understand it when she says, more than you will ever know. And she's directing it in that way because it's very powerful. She understands that people like us will hear her words that you have destroyed so much more than you'll ever know. We can hear that, we can feel it, because it's talking about the grandchildren that won't get to spend time with the grandparents anymore, the great-grandchildren who are going to be born, the adventures the couple were going to go on to share with their family, the joy in the life of their family, replaced by the trauma of their losses, the vulnerability of the world that's now been affected by the actions of this couple who killed them. That is what she's talking about. And yet equally she's saying, and you will never know it. Now, it's not just to say you have not been the recipient of trauma, because we know both of these people have dealt with trauma. What she's saying is you don't get the depths of what we're discussing, of what we're experiencing, of what we identify with, because you're not capable. If you're capable of executing two incalculably important people for their vehicle, you cannot know what it is like to truly love. You cannot know what it is like to truly lose, because you would do everything in your power to protect as opposed to harm. Even though she is saying you have destroyed so much more than you'll ever know, it's not just because they don't know the meaning of those two people to their family. They're saying so much more in those words. They're saying you're not capable of knowing, and we are, because we understand love, we understand connection, we understand loss, we understand protection, we understand the sanctity and sanctuary of life that these stole from them. So it's very powerful. Now, 3 months after Williams was given life without parole, in February 2022, Nova makes a deal with state prosecutors. She agreed to plead guilty again to multiple felony charges. She's 34 at this point, and she pled guilty to first degree murder, tampering with evidence, and also unlawful possession of a firearm. Now, in exchange for her plea, she, it was agreed, would be convicted of a lesser murder charge. Now, the defence went in very much with the story of, yes, what she did was wrong, but did she really do it? That was their mindset. Did you really do it? Did I actually do it? Did I actually get involved in the murder of these two incredibly important, lovely people? Yes, did you do that? Yes and no. So we're going to say no. We're going to say no. Yes and no. Just go with the no. Go with the no. Okay, so no, that's right. No, you had nothing to do with it. You were just, you know, a victim of circumstance. You were just a person who was dealing with a very difficult partner. The partner that I'd chosen to be with and actually taking my child with, that partner. But we're not going to frame it that way in court, because that could look pretty bad for you regarding your choices. You know, that's kind of the way that the defence are dealing with it. They're like saying, you know, oh, was she really guilty? Yes! My God, yes, of course she was really bloody guilty. So the prosecutors basically, and very incriminatingly, believe that Nova was responsible for purchasing the weapon that killed Michelle and James. And that makes sense, because bear in mind, there might be minimal checks on people who buy guns, but you can imagine somebody who has such a list of felonies isn't going to have one handed over to them. So Nova would need to go and buy that gun. So that means she's not just complicit. That means that she's not just somebody who's a passenger in this situation. She's colluded fully, and she has allowed that trigger to be there at the point of it being pulled. Without the gun, there's no murder, as far as I can see. And the reality is that Nova seems to be a willing participant in the killing. Now, I agree, on a mitigation level, she had a lack of prior criminal history, and we all agree that's something that courts will take into consideration. But this is a double homicide. This is the brutal execution of a couple who are just trying to live their dream. So I'm not that comfortable with Nova's sentence. She got 20 years behind bars for the murders, and then she was given another 10 years for the other charges. But the sentences are actually running concurrently, and that means that she's eligible for parole in 2039. And I don't know about you, but I'm not entirely sure that 20 years behind bars is something that represents what I've just discussed. I appreciate that Nova was very different to Williams. I appreciate that on a felony level, she was not in the same ballpark until she met him. But let's be honest, we all know about Foliager. We all know that sometimes couples meet and they go from being bad to being absolutely downright right evil. When it comes down to the Fred Wests and the Rose Wests, to the Ian Bradys and the Myra Hindleys, to the Barbie killers in the US, and we know that these couples meet and then they descend into a darkness so evil, so brutal, so fatal, that bodies are left in the wake of their relationship. The only distinction between Nova and Williams is they got caught early enough to not kill again. I find it really disconcerting that people look at Nova as a victim in this. She was not a victim. She was a tyrant. She was a predator. She was a perpetrator. She was a killer, and she got 20 years. And again, I appreciate that it costs a lot of money to go to court. They would definitely have wanted to get a guilty plea. At the end of the day, the family know that she's got 20 years, and some people would be very sympathetic to her and say, well, she was a victim too. And I would say, no. The minute that you agree to go with that course of action, the minute that you see two people killed and then you agree to bury them, the minute you get in an RV and travel with a person who's so murderous and violent and you were aware that you have a child with you, you have made choices that are not just bad. You've made choices that are about who you are as a human being, and that's because you are bad. We can have terrible experiences in our childhood, in our adolescence. We can go through traumas that others can only imagine, and it doesn't turn us into the monsters I've described today. I feel that she got off very lightly. I feel he's exactly where he deserves to be. I feel like James and Michelle deserved more when it came down to justice. And I hope that their family are healing. And I hope that that pair of boots that the grandchild was sent will always represent the heart of who they were. People who didn't have a lot of money, who had to work their way around, but would still invest fully in the people that they belong to and who love them. And that's so symbolic of the human beings that they were, and so symbolic of people that we should all wish to have in our communities. They didn't get to pursue all the travels that they were destined, in my opinion, to have had the right to pursue. But I genuinely believe that they're together now. And I imagine that the horizons that they're seeing every single rise and fall will be incomparable with anything that you or I can truly conceive of in our current paradigm. This is absolutely dedicated to an unbelievably inspirational couple that somebody like myself can only hope to aspire to be like down the line.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.